Welcome to the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast, where educators go to find inspiration and learn world-class strategies from top leaders across the globe. Better Leaders, Better Schools was created by Danny Sunshine Bauer.
This is episode number 136 with Michelle Lenzen. Hi there, my name is Danny Sunshine Bauer. I'm a former classroom teacher and school administrator turned life and leadership coach. I'm also the host of this podcast where each week I share my conversation with top leaders across the globe to help you accelerate your leadership development. In today's show with Michelle Lenzen, we explore a number of interesting topics like how design thinking can be applied to a crappy situation. And we really explore what design thinking even is. I'm new to this idea, and so I learned quite a bit. Another topic I learned a lot about today was human-centered design. So thanks for spending some time with me and listening to this podcast. I hope you enjoy the show. But before we jump into the episode, I'd like to take some time to thank our show sponsors. I'd like to share an incredible free resource for the better leaders that listen to this podcast. It's the Top 10 Fundraising Ideas for 2018, and that's available at schoolzonepodcast.com. And just like the title says, you'll get the top 10 school fundraising ideas for 2018 when you download it at schoolzonepodcast.com. Well, hey there, better leaders. I am thrilled to be joined with Michelle Lenzen. I met her in a Seth Godin marketing class, and she is a teacher, writer, and the founder of Humans at Heart. She runs an after-school program at Yes Prep Northside, where she teaches high school students communication skills and creative problem solving. Through her company, Humans at Heart, Michelle uses qualitative research and human-centered design to help brands connect with their audiences. Michelle, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me, Daniel. I'm excited to chat with you today.
Yes, I have been really looking forward to this conversation after we connected there in the marketing course. And you just seem like a genuinely awesome person. So I said, Michelle needs to be on the show. And can you start from the beginning, Michelle, and tell us what inspired you to pursue a career in education?
Oh, what a great question. So I initially, when I was in high school and younger, I had always worked with kids. So I was a camp counselor. I was babysitting. I was always surrounded by children. And when it came time to choose a career, I said, you know what? I want to do something creative. And I went to school for advertising. So I studied advertising and business. And then I got out into the real world. I got an advertising job. And after about 6 months, I was like, wait, what am I doing? It was a little bit soul crushing. So from there, I decided, okay, I need to find a way that I can somehow work with kids and whether in some capacity. And I wasn't sure what that would look like, but I ended up meeting someone that worked at Yes Prep Northside or a Yes Prep school in Houston. And they said, oh, if you want to be a teacher, if you have a 4-year degree from an accredited university, you can apply, you'll do a sample teach, and then you can work as a teacher and simultaneously be certified to teach in Texas. So I said, oh my goodness, this sounds great. And this was in the summer. So this was probably late June, early July. And I applied for a school. I chose one that was close by me. And I ended up getting an interview, doing a sample teach. And then the school year started probably 3 or 4 weeks later. So it was a whirlwind. And I spent a year teaching at Yes Prep Northside, and I was teaching reading intervention. And I noticed that a lot of my students, because I was teaching kids that were really far behind, a lot of my students really struggled with creativity. They struggled with simple tasks like writing sentences. And as a teacher, I wanted to figure out some way that I could engage them further, engage them in some kind of different way. And as we were talking about, life kind of takes you in unexpected places. And after that year of teaching at Yes Prep, I ended up getting relocated. My boyfriend and I moved to Rio de Janeiro for a year. So I had about a year off away from the classroom. I was volunteering and teaching English in the favelas in Rio. And then when I came back to Houston about a year and a half later, I said, you know what? I need to figure out how to get back into the school and maybe not as a full-time teacher, but as an after-school teacher that I can then create like a some kind of creative outlet to get kids out of the box, outside of their regular 9-to-4 day, and doing something really fun. And so that's when then I decided to start this Northside Design program at Yes Prep Northside.
That is a wild story. And thank you for sharing it with the listeners. I'm curious, on your return to the classroom, how did your experience teaching and volunteering in Rio, I guess, help inform and shape your education practice?
You know what? It was interesting. So when I was teaching in Houston, I was teaching reading intervention, which is basic phonics, simple reading skills. And then when I went to Rio, I was teaching kids who were, again, the same age. They were early teenagers. And I was basically using the same skills that I was using with my Houston students, just with students that were a little bit further behind in Rio. And it made me really grateful for the education system in Houston, because there's just so many more opportunities here. So teaching, I was teaching in Rocinha, which is recently one of the more violent favelas in Brazil. And it was crazy to go in and just kind of see the poverty that these kids were living in, but to also see how positive they were and how eager they were to learn, and how it's like these kids could be anywhere in the world, which I think was the thing that touched my heart the most. So when I came back to Houston, I said, okay, I know that I have opportunities to impact these kids and to get back in the classroom. So let's figure out a way to connect with them and to help them.
Yeah. And can you tell me the story of starting Humans at Heart?
Yeah, I sure can. So I started Humans at Heart a little bit. Well, okay. So let me backtrack a little bit, because I'll explain the human side of things. So when I wanted to create this program at Yes Prep Northside, I decided to enroll in IDEO's human-centered design course. So human-centered design is basically a creative approach to problem solving. And I had been exposed to this when I was in college, and I just love the process. So it's basically you identify a problem, going in knowing you don't know the answer. So you get to know the people involved in the problem, the situation, and then you prototype all these different ideas of what might work to help the people that you're serving. So I went through the human-centered design process to design this Northside Design program at the school. So basically, I took the kids through, there was about 8 students, and I took them through a 3-week summer camp where I just gave them all these different creative things that they could do. So we did some meditating, we did some free writing, we did some improv games. We learned like some intro to coding stuff. We were doing, you know, blogging. So I was just trying to expose them to everything and then have the kids give me feedback on what they wanted to do. And it was funny because I was so passionate about this human-centered design and solving problems that then when I had the students vote what they wanted to do, they said, "Miss Lenzen, we want to do that too. We want to solve problems that we see in our school and in our community."
Right.
So, which was really neat for me. So we ended up then after the summer, we ended up making that the fall and spring semester program focused on solving the problems in our communities. And from that, I really, my love for human-centered design is so real. So I decided, you know what, I want to make a company called Humans at Heart, and I want to help people connect on a human level with the people around them. So right now, Humans at Heart is working with brands and helping companies understand the communication skills and basically going through the human-centered design process of doing the research and the qualitative interviews and really getting to know the people that they're working with to then better serve those needs.
So I want to definitely talk about that and, you know, contextualize it for school leaders, because for them to understand the people they're serving, right, that the humans that they're taken care of and that they're trying to provide a world-class education to, I don't know that we consider that enough. It's kind of ironic and weird in the school that you don't think about it enough. But before we go there, I'm just curious, when the kids said, "We want to do that, we want to solve problems," what were some of those problems that the kids saw in their community that they wanted to solve?
Yeah, that's a great question. So when we first started out the semester, we talked about issues that they saw in their community. And over the summer, the students were pretty passionate about the amount of stray animals in their neighborhood. So on the north side of Houston, there's a lot of stray cats and dogs. And it's also a cultural thing, because a lot of times if a family doesn't want an animal, they just kind of let them go. So there's like these little, it reminds me of a movie where there's all these animals that are just kind of running the streets with their little crews. And so at first the student said, yeah, maybe we should try to help these animals in the street. And then when the school year started, the students had all these problems that they saw in their physical school. So they said, first it started with like the lunchroom's really crowded. Then they were like, our bathrooms are so disgusting. And basically once we had a list of all these different problems that students saw, and then some of the other problems were like bullying or people not being accepting. And then I had the students vote on what they wanted to do and guess which one won of all the things.
The bathrooms.
Yes, it's the bathrooms that won. So
I was looking at your blog though. I cheated.
Oh, okay. No, it's okay.
I was preparing.
Yeah, it's funny because I kept trying to give the students an out. Like, are you sure you want to spend like all your time researching the bathrooms? And the students were like, Miss Lenzen, it's crazy in there. We gotta solve this. So that's the issue that we ended up tackling last year and really trying to understand the issues in the bathrooms and what potential solutions could look like and who are the people that are involved. And it ended up being a really eye-opening experience for me and for the students.
What did they do to address the issue?
So we started out, so in the human-centered design process, you basically start with research. So we started with just observing the bathrooms, taking note of what was really wrong. Because when the students would say, you know, it's terrible in there, I would say, okay, well, let's go more into detail. What do you mean by terrible? And they would say, well, it kind of smells or it's dirty. So we had the students go after school when the bathrooms were empty and take some pictures of things in the bathroom, like the doors weren't fully, you know, when you shut a bathroom door and you can kind of like still see through the crack, like absolutely. You can see the person in there.
Yeah.
So they had some stalls like that. There were open garbage cans that maybe would be overflowing or just like a little bit of water on the sink. And in my point of view, I really didn't think the problems were that bad other than the smell was kind of all encompassing. And they were issues though, when the students would go in there every day and that's what they saw. So, but then it got even more interesting because then I had the students go and interview the janitors, the teachers, and other students. And that was really neat because then the students were coming to me and saying, oh my gosh, Miss Lenzen, this is what's happening. This is the real problem, which was funny. So one thing that was interesting with the janitors is that I think it was really great to have the kids empathize and understand who the janitors were as people. So then see these women who maybe live in the Northside community and they're the ones that are going to clean up the messes. And we really realized that the boys' bathroom and the girls' bathroom were dealing with two separate issues, where the boys' bathroom was a little bit more destructive or a little bit more messy going to the bathroom. And the girls was really more of just girls trying to deal with like their periods and disposing of all that, the tampons and things, and kind of dealing with the smell. And so the issues were different. So when I spoke with these janitors, it was really helpful to hear the janitors' opinions. And the kids came back to me really fired up and said, you know, these janitors are only making this much money per hour. This one janitor said every day there's like some boy peeing on the wall or something. And I feel like for the first time, once it got to that point where the kids were the ones that were doing the investigating, it felt like their problem that they were then really, really invested in solving, which was cool. So then we prototyped all of these different solutions and I let the kids go a little bit crazy thinking about, you know, what if we did this? What if we had this light that could, you know, kill all the germs in the bathroom? What if we had all these crazy air fresheners and fans and things? And then it really came down to, after talking with the janitors, that the biggest issue specifically for the boys' bathroom was just behavior and respect and people doing things to kind of be funny. So what we ended up doing at the end of the project was we started with an empathy video. So we then had the students create a video for the rest of the students and they interviewed the janitors and kind of talked about the problem and made it like a PSA for all the other students in the school to say, hey, these are the issues that we're dealing with. These are the women who have to clean this stuff. Like, let's try to respect our school and this space and help these people out.
Was it effective?
Well, you know what? The thing is that we went through the human-centered design process across the whole year. So we created this video at the end of the year, and it was hard to tell what the measurable impact was on it because, you know, at the end of the year, you're like, okay, things are looking better, but is it because the students really, there's been a change, or is it just, you know, students are ready for the school year to be done? So there's still definitely things that I want to do this year in terms of creating measurable impact for the students and really helping them see how to do that. Last year was really focused on just teaching them the process of how you even go about finding a problem, identifying it, and then figuring out, okay, what's the real cause of this problem?
I love that. And, you know, I don't know, I've heard design thinking, so I really appreciate you unpacking all the steps that you led the students through, from research to defining words. What does terrible really mean? Taking pictures of things and the qualitative interviews of janitors, teachers, other students, prototyping solutions and culminating really with some solutions and a empathetic PSA for their peers. So it's really interesting to hear, you know, that process you went through. So thank you for sharing it with me and the listeners. This podcast is a proud member of the Education Podcast Network. Podcasts for educators and podcasts by educators. Listen to all the great education podcasts at edupodcastnetwork.com. That's edupodcastnetwork.com. But then going back to a question I asked many, many minutes ago, how do you help companies, when you work with companies and brands, how do you help them see the humans, the people that they serve? Because if you remember, schools, I feel like they just don't see them sometimes. And so I'm curious if there's some, you know, ideas that you can share with school leaders today so that they can serve their communities even better starting tomorrow.
Yes, absolutely. So the one thing that I really focus on is qualitative research. So a company will come to me and say, hey, I need to be marketing my services, or they might have an existing product and say, we don't really know how we're doing. We don't know if we're resonating. So really what I do is I come in and I say, okay, well, let's outline who are these target audience people that you want to be talking to, that you're wondering what they're feeling, what they're thinking. And from there, I create like a study basically of how can we learn as much about these people on a holistic level. So I'll do some secondary research if I can about some demographic stuff, some issues that they might be facing. And then it comes down to really going in and doing either in-depth interviews or focus groups. And typically an in-depth interview is great to really understand all of the factors that are going on in someone's life and their stresses and their worries and the things that make them happy and the things that really freak them out. So I typically will do these in-depth interviews and I make them very open to really understand these people in their lives and in the context of whatever the industry is, whatever kind of product it is. And then from there, I share these insights with the company. So I'll interview maybe 6 to 8 people and share, hey, these are the common themes that I'm seeing with all of these people. And it's surprising because a lot of times people, if they've been in the industry for a while, would say, yeah, these are things that I've noticed, but I didn't realize, like, I haven't really ever seen them put on a wall in front of me. So like, now I know these are the really important factors. Mm. This helps me understand what's going on. And it's also great at identifying the challenges. So for example, I have one client who is in the IT space and they have this idea, they're B2B. So they had this idea of the issues that their target audience is facing. So I went in and did some customer interviews, and it's crazy because then when I talk with people about the issues that they're dealing with, it might be something totally unrelated to what everyone else thinks. It's something internally. They're dealing with communication problems with their team, or they're dealing with training their sales guys to really see the value in something. And that's been the most fascinating part for me, is every time I do these in-depth interviews, is that it always comes down to some kind of human elements, whether it's some kind of miscommunication or some kind of struggle going on a human level. And then I will take those insights and show them to the company and say, okay, let's brainstorm around these ideas. People are facing these things. How might we serve them? How might we help them alleviate this pain point or alleviate this situation? And then from there, it's just really up to the company to decide, okay, strategically, how can we better serve these people that we're trying to connect with? And then it goes into the implementation phase of creating either new marketing messaging, creating new systems or new programs to then directly connect with those needs, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it absolutely does. And that's pretty wild. You know, I like that you unpack the process, right? And so I hope school leaders heard. It sounds like you're putting a lot of sweat equity into in-depth interviews to really try to uncover and then look for themes that folks are experiencing across the board. From there, definitely throw it up on a wall and say, what does this mean to us? What does it mean to our company? What does it mean to our client, our community that we serve? And kind of like the design process, start prototyping solutions, which may be messaging or maybe something you actually have to physically do to a product or within a school, like how it's designed.
Yeah. And the one thing I would say for school leaders is obviously school leaders have so much going on. And one way that I've seen school leaders try to get feedback is they send out surveys. So they'll send surveys out to their staff or to the parents or to the students. And surveys only tell you so much information. I think surveys are a great starting point, but then you want to know the answers. You want to know the why behind these things. And the way that someone might write it on paper is different than the way that they would articulate it. And if you really got to the source of the problem. So I would say a good thing for school leaders, if they want to get feedback from their staff or from parents in the community, rather than sending surveys and using that as like the golden ticket, send some surveys and then select a handful of parents to interview to learn more. So you might choose a staff member that's really unhappy or choose one that's really happy, because you want to talk to a diverse range of people to see, okay, what's to get a holistic idea of what the situation looks like on the best end of the scale, on the worst end, and everywhere in between.
And I think it helps too. We did something like this at a school I worked at, Brooks. I think it helps to have somebody that's not necessarily in the leadership team conducting those interviews.
Definitely.
And therefore, people spoke their minds and their truth, and it was anonymous, but you had that data, right? Because you're doing it live. So it's different than just a survey. And I think what I hear you saying is like, you know, kind of like you did with the kids. Okay, the bathroom's terrible. What does terrible mean? To get those, get at those specific examples that you can then, you know, take action on as a school leader.
Exactly.
So I'm curious, you know, we talked about design thinking, human-centered approach. What would be a class that you would add to our schools that's not currently taught that you know of?
Ooh, so I love human-centered design. Have you heard of any human-centered design courses in like a high school level?
No.
Okay. So I would love to add a human-centered design course, because I was exposed to it when I was in college. And then I discovered this woman, and I'm not going to remember her name, but she is in India and she basically runs schools based around human-centered design. So she has kids as early as kindergarten doing human-centered design projects of identifying a problem in their community or in their school, and then working through how they would solve that problem. And for me to see that, and she has a bunch of YouTube videos, and I can send you the link to include, but she has a bunch of videos, and I'm like, man, if they figured out a way to teach children creative problem-solving skills, that to me feels like the future. As everyone starts talking about, you know, robots are going to be taking over any kind of job that you can, you know, you can automate, essentially. And the skills that are going to be the most valuable are the creative problem solving skills, the things that a robot can't solve. So for me, I would love to include a class that was human-centered design. And human-centered design, the way that I ran my program was, the key is that you want to be connecting and collaborating with your team and looking at things in new ways. So I would always open up my class with improv games, which the students loved. It's an incredible way to do some team building and to get the students laughing and feeling like kids, even though most of their day they spend, you know, kind of sitting in a chair, reading, writing, being students. So I love the idea of just having a really creative outlet of doing some improv. Maybe there's some meditating, working on a creative challenge, and really giving the students freedom to think about wild and crazy ideas and then figure out the logistics of making those things happen.
Improv games, great way to start staff meetings too. Michelle, what are your favorite improv games to play? Maybe one or two.
So it really depends on the situation. A game that's really easy to do for a new group of people is called Cross the Circle. And it's basically where everyone stands in a circle and you have to say someone's name across the circle and you start walking towards them. And then they have to say someone else's name before you get to them. And it's kind of fun. It sounds a little bit confusing, but when you play it, it's a great way for people to learn everyone else's names in a pretty low stakes way. So I love that improv game. I'm trying to think of my students' favorite games, because there were some games that were so much fun that they would ask to play again and again. There was this one game called New York Lemonade, and these are old games. These games that were games that I found in Viola Spolin's Theater Games for the Classroom book. So New York Lemonade is fun. It's just the kids kind of do a chant, and they basically, one group of kids will start acting out some profession. So they all are doing something different within some profession. And then the other team has to try to guess what they're doing. So are they, you know, are they construction workers? Are they all bus drivers, or what are they doing? And it was a really fun game because it was fun to see the students all try to think of these different professions and all kind of act out their ideas of what these professions were, which was fun. And the kids loved it because then it turned into like a game of tag. Once the other team guessed the right answer, then everyone had to run to one side. So they really loved that. But I would suggest for anyone that wants to do improv games to get Viola Spolin's book, Theater Games for the Classroom, because I love it. And it has so many great, great games.
We will absolutely link that one up for all the listeners in the show notes. The go-to book of improv games that I used to use was Group Improvisation. And that one was shared within Second City quite a bit when people take classes over there. It has a lot of the games that they call, you know, playing. And they break them down super easy for you. You could absolutely do them with your staff. But here's the thing. You got to be all in as the facilitator. Like, you can't think that it's not cool, corny, not going to be fun or whatever. You got to be enthusiastic and sold out, or it's totally going to flop.
Yes, that is the truth. Do you have a favorite improv game,
Daniel? I knew you were going to ask that because I brought up the question, and then I'm trying to think of ones that we played. I think the easiest one, I remember doing this in the classroom, not necessarily with staff, but I think it was called Red Ball or something like that. And the whole point was that you just had an imaginary ball that you would throw around the room. And I think you would say like a red ball as you threw it. And you might say somebody's name as well, because a lot of times these improv playing games are about building teamwork, right? And building community. So there probably was a name element as well. And then once that one ball was getting passed around pretty fast, right? It's imaginary. You would introduce a new ball, or you might introduce something crazy like a watermelon, or maybe a Chinese throwing star, you know, or a bomb. And so that was always a lot of fun for sure.
Yeah, that's a fun game. And that is another, like you were saying, that's a game that you can definitely add more elements and make it really interactive, and it builds. So if you do it one day, you can add some complexities the next day. And it's a game that just doesn't get old.
So you know that one? I'm not making it up.
I know it. Yeah, it's a pretty common group game for beginners.
Yeah, low stakes, really easy, but just a whole lot of fun.
Exactly.
School leadership is hard work. Why should funding student-centered programs be difficult too? If you are stressed about your budget and where you'll find some extra cash to run a great program for kids, I have a solution for you. Introducing the top 10 school fundraising ideas for 2018. In this guide, you will find the best school fundraising ideas available in 2018. My favorite company described in the guide is School Spirit Vending. School Spirit Vending brings hassle-free fundraising to schools through custom sticker vending machines installed in your school. The best part, you do absolutely no work. The School Spirit Vending team installs, maintains, and shares the revenue collected with the school. You can learn more about School Spirit Vending and the other magnificent companies mentioned in the top 10 school fundraising ideas for 2018 at schoolzonepodcast.com. Go there now, download the top 10 school fundraising ideas for 2018 at schoolzonepodcast.com.
Michelle, when you think of the word leader, who's the first person that comes to mind?
Oh, I knew you were going to ask me this question. And when I initially thought about this question, I'm like, who comes to mind when I think about a leader? And then the first person that came to mind was Martin Luther King Jr. And I think for him, I think about him as a leader because he had such a way of connecting people and moving people with his words and getting people to take action. And I think a leader in any situation, whether it's a school leader or a leader of a group of people or a company, they really need to know how to, basically they have to have something they care about, and they need to know how to get other people to care about it as well, and how to get them to take action and to really live up to their potential to pursue it. So in my mind, I think that's really the key to leadership, is figuring out people and figuring out how to motivate them and how to speak to them and speak to their hearts.
What's the worst leadership advice you've ever been given or heard being given?
The worst leadership advice, that I've heard or ever been given. Man, you know, there's been times, I think the worst leadership advice I have heard is that there'll be something that will go wrong and it's like, oh, blame so-and-so, put the blame somewhere else. And in my experience, that's the worst thing a leader can do, is not own up to, if a mistake was made, to own up to it and say, yes, that was my fault, and not try to say it was some kind of external factor, or try to put the blame somewhere else, because then it's a blame game and no one wins and everybody's in the box and not communicating.
So Michelle, we talked about theater games for the classroom and group improvisation. In addition to those two books, what books should every principal read right now and why?
What books? So one book that I really love is Creative Confidence, and I have it right behind my computer. I'm using it. Hold on, let me see. So Creative Confidence is basically written by the guys who started IDEO. So it's a book which I think is really great. And there's some games and some activities to do with people or students or your staff. So I really recommend that book as well.
And what do you do for fun?
What do I do for fun? Wow. I love reading. I'm surrounded by books. I'm like, is there any other books that I want to recommend?
Yeah.
I love reading, and I love just going outside, trying to do active things. I love trying new workout classes, which is kind of funny. But right now I'm taking Krav Maga. So that's been interesting. Krav Maga is basically Israeli self-defense. So it's interesting. So I'm taking some Krav Maga. I'm going to the YMCA, doing some of those classes, which is fun. But yeah, I like doing active things and connecting with people outside of work in some way.
If you could be automatically good at something, Michelle, what would it be?
This one is so easy for me. If I could be automatically good at something, I would want to be good at organizing things in my life, because organization is just not my forte. There's some people that are really type A that just organize things for fun, and that is not me. So that would be one thing that I would love to have, just switch a button and then everything in my life gets organized.
What message would you put on all school marquees across the globe if you could do so for just one day?
Whoa. What would I put? I would probably put something funny. I don't know if I have a saying right now, but I would probably put something that made people laugh a little bit, because those are the best, when there's a message that you kind of have to read it twice and then you laugh a little bit. So I would think about something witty to write.
One of the witty things I wrote for the show notes was how your students applied design thinking to a crappy situation.
Exactly. Something like that.
So Michelle, I really appreciate your time today. It's been a joy talking with you. You've made it to the end of the podcast, and I have a pretty big question to ask you. You're building a school from the ground up. You're not limited by budget or resources. Your only limitation is your imagination. How would you build your dream school, and what would be your top three priorities?
Wow. How would I build my dream school? My top three priorities would be creating collaborative environments. I would love to create a school that didn't feel like a traditional school. So somehow really changing the atmosphere up. So that would be one, is like changing the environment. Then my second priority would be hiring people and training them in human-centered design and improvisation and like the importance of communication skills, because I think once you have those key communication skills down, the rest really, you learn how to collaborate and the rest really comes together. And my third priority, so cool environment, great people that I'm teaching human-centered design. And my third priority would be resources. So the biggest thing that I wish for at my school was to have, I think it would be excellent if there was more resources for the families and for outside of just, you know, there's one school counselor, but if there was someone that could help if they had, you know, health questions, or if they, if the parents needed some like psychology help or a therapist or just some resources that could serve the family unit outside of just the child during the school day. So I think that that's really that connection to family and to community and to caring about people is the third piece and maybe the most important piece.
Michelle, thank you for being a part of the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast. Do you have any parting words of advice, and what's the best way to get a hold of you?
The best way to get a hold of me is to email me, either michelle@humansatheart.com, or you can go to my website, humansatheart.com, and you'll find me. You can connect with me there too.
All right. Well, listen, Better Leaders, thank you so much for investing in yourself today by listening to this podcast. Remember that life's 10% of what happens to you, 90% of how you react to it. So go out there today and be a better leader. Today's podcast was brought to you by Daniel and Michelle. Be better starting today by heading over to betterleadersbetterschools.com and type Michelle in the search bar, and the show notes page will pop up. You'll get the highlights of today's episode, links to all the resources, and the best way to connect. Michelle, thank you so much for sharing your leadership insights and helping the better leaders be better.
Thanks, Daniel.
Better leaders, just a few more things before you take off. If you enjoyed today's episode, make sure you subscribe, rate, and review the show. This helps gives the show some social proof, aka iTunes juice, and encourages new people to listen to the show. If you are a social media junkie, share your biggest takeaway from the show, and feel free to tag me on Twitter or Instagram. My handle is Alien Earbud, an anagram for my name, Daniel Bauer. Take the letters, switch them around, and create something interesting and new. That's how I got it. This Sunday is the weekend resource. Do you want to get a short email from me every Sunday where I share the best resources I have come across, links to interesting articles, books, blogs, and podcasts that have challenged my thinking, and a quote that's inspired me and will inspire you as well? If you'd like access to this resource, head over to betterleadersbetterschools.com and join the newsletter at the top of the page. Over 1,000 school leaders subscribe, and I think you'll benefit from it too. In the newsletter, I also share when a new blog or podcast comes out, as well as different opportunities to work with me. Thanks again for listening to the show.